All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, October 21st, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is 54 degrees and very dark and rainy here in upstate New York. I think this is day number four, and it has just been torrential. So hopefully I don't need a canoe here shortly. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Obsoleting of Humans, White House Preparing Humanity for an AI Future. And yeah, we spent an entire day looking at the progression of AI, some of the setup that's been happening recently over the month of October. We had Charlie Rose come out guest hosting 60 Minutes, which was unusual in and of itself. He doesn't do that too often. Presenting two different artificial intelligences, showing the wonders of how amazing this will be as these machines that become smarter than humans start taking over things that are just too consuming for our puny little human brains. One was IBM's Watson, and they showed in just 5 short years how Watson had gone from just learning to read and understand text to being able to diagnose not only difficult cancers and come up with treatment plans that entire boards of professional oncologists missed. And I think they had said it was at a 30% rate. They found that with patients that had already been diagnosed and treatments suggested, there were 30% of the patients that Watson found additional information that led to additional treatments. That was pretty a pretty huge number. They had convinced 20 oncology units in 20 different hospitals to start beta testing Watson. And Watson has now gone on to start learning genomics and looking at scans as well to find tumors and things of that nature. Put on a seatbelt, because right after that aired, about a week or so, actually I think it was like 4 or 5 days later, the White House released a document that was going to be setting the guidelines for the future of AI, preparing for the future of artificial intelligence was the name of the document. And we've talked before about how this is happening way faster than anyone is letting on. Charlie kind of let the cat out of the bag as he was showing Watson and talking to the creator of Watson about how it was like a child growing up and learning, and now they've set it free. We've looked at some of the experimentation that's been going on in university labs where they have been teaching robots not only to learn, and we found out now that there are projects going on. First, we read a story out of MIT Technology Review, and now we read one yesterday about Google. They're actually teaching robots not only to learn, but they are uploading their learning to the cloud, and now we have this cloud learning. So one robot learns, all robots get that skill. And as they're doing this, they're enabling this exponential growth of deep learning or machine learning. It's kind of what the term is for it. They're doing simulations as close as they can right now in a couple different respects and a couple different projects to try to simulate the human brain. You know, and there are other brain projects going on. There's the Global Brain Initiative. We had Obama ink an executive order supporting the Brain Initiative. And all of our big health divisions like the National Institute of Health and some of the big neurology universities, as well as the big boys like Google as well and DARPA, have all been working, and Kurzweil along with Google, have all been working on trying to create an artificial brain that would function a lot like a human brain. So then we read about how the military is trying to create machines that actually reason. There was a story that came out of Langley Research, which I believe is tied directly to NASA. NASA, of course, is the yin and the yang of DARPA. A League of Extraordinary Machines. First steps to autonomous reasoning systems. Now, we've had autonomous systems. They've been working on that over the last few years. We have had lots of concerns from even the tech industry. Stephen Hawking is probably the most notable. Elon Musk, and like I've said, even Bill Gates came out, but I think that was just to look like he's not as evil as he is, saying that, you know, we need to be cautious developing this new life form, because it essentially is, especially when we take a look at some of these other big 21st century initiatives, one of such being synthetic biology. Another that is connected directly to synthetic biology is precision medicine. Remember, a lot of synthetic biology's promise is to be able to develop all these new drugs that never existed before, utilizing two brand new amino acids that don't exist anywhere in the universe, by the way. Put them into the DNA sequences, and in the lab, they've had them reproducing. They can pass those new genes on to offspring. Now, how horrifying is that? They have not only created life that doesn't exist anywhere else in the universe with these two new amino acids, but this life can reproduce, and it's all being done in the name of a few different things. But one that I've read a lot about, and about how they're going to spin this, is that it's going to allow them, with all these extra permutations that they can form, instead of just having ATCG, they now can have ATCG, which all life has, plus they've added X and Y, and it will allow them to develop new drugs that, hey, might be able to cure you, all in the name of precision medicine, that are all matched to your DNA sequences, so we can flip little switches or feed different substances into your body's ecosystem. What's even more interesting about that is that they have discovered, as they've been messing around with a lot of this synthetic biology, they have found ways to literally program cells. They have been able to take, I mean, even in the simplest ways of GMO, take viruses, phages, suck the guts out, put their own guts in, and then send them to go infect cells within the target organism. It could be a plant cell, or it could be a bacterium. We've seen that quite a few times now. I'm going to talk about that maybe next week. Look at that Wolbachia and that the DNA from the Black Widow poison that they have found. First time that they've found something from the animal kingdom, in this case the insect kingdom, inside of a different branch of life, this being a bacterium. But, you know, they're finding ways to not only flip switches and add sequences, but also literally program life to do their bidding. And it's no different from what they're doing here with AI, because AI, in the tin can version of AI, i.e. Atlas and Sophia, we're going to listen to Sophia today. That was part two of that interview with Charlie Rose. As we are imbuing these objects, because that's all they were initially, with intelligence and the capability to reason and react, to be able to make independent decisions and become self-aware. Wait, this is just, I mean, I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. Out of every single science fiction, and I was a science fiction junkie growing up, I love space and everything new. So everything I learned from Star Trek. Not really, but you know what I'm saying. Like, there have been a lot of innovations in the last 50 years since Star Trek first hit the stage that have come about because kids like me grew up watching Star Trek and said, hey, I want a tricorder. Hey, I want a replicator. I mean, even 3D printing and being able to print cells. I mean, we talked about that a long time ago using sugar scaffolding. They were able to take cells from different organs and spit them out through a little spray nozzle onto a scaffold. And then get those cells to grow. Now they don't even have to do biopsies to get some of your kidney cells or liver cells and start growing them. They can just do that skin scrape. And they can put a little chemical on it, and it turns your skin cells into pluripotent stem cells. And those stem cells are even better than the embryonic stem cells, and they can create any type of bodily cell. Brain cells, right? They were doing that experiment with the people who were brain dead. We got to check up on that, because that was supposed to have already been happening. Lung cells, I saw. They were doing some experimentation with turning those skin cells into lung cells and then doing a treatment on lung cancer. And I think that might have been a Chinese experiment. But as they are conquering all kinds of biology from the entire planet, and that DARPA lady said, an article where they had already talked about the future of terraforming Mars on Earth to clean it up a little bit for those places that are no longer habitable by humans. But she eventually wanted to push a button and be able to create life on demand. Well, as we now start working on the synthetic human genome, Mr. Georgie Church, and we are working on these humanoid robots. We read about Kinjuro yesterday. That can do more push-ups because he sweats. Kinjuro, I hope you looked at that picture. If not, I'll put it again in the notes for today's show. Go click on that and scroll down to the bottom and take a look at Kinjuro. He's pretty damn scary. He's got like a bodily frame like that Atlas 2.0, except a little more human-esque. He's got a face, which is kind of a scary face, too. He's got like an expression in these eyebrows. But he's also got a skeletal musculature where he's got the skeletal frame, he's got muscles and tendons all built in, and then he's got his actuators and different joints and things going on there. He's a pretty frightening looking robot, and that's number three for that Japanese company that developed him. So all they got to do now is start building synthetic skin and, you know, the ability for those little beady HD camera eyes to be able to take a look at your face, do 230-point facial recognition, and then determine with your emotional algorithm what you are feeling and thinking. They're even able to do like lie detection through your little micro actions that happen on your face. You know, AI has got a million times the capacity from what we were hearing from Charlie as to what our human brains do already. And this is just the beginning. This is what we forgot. You know, we look at these and we go, whoa, this is pretty damn scary. But think about it. This is only the last three or four, five, maybe maximum years that I've been sitting here squawking about this. And we've been looking at DARPA from the very early days of, we have drones, you know. And we have now followed this technology to the point where it is absolute insanity. This is every sci-fi movie I've ever seen in my life, times a thousand, as to what we're seeing here in the not-too-distant future. Anyway, let's go back to this Langley Research Center press release from October 3rd, 2016. A League of Extraordinary Machines, First Steps to Autonomous Reasoning Systems. As motor vehicles increasingly head toward autonomy, and don't forget, self-driving cars is going to be a whole part of this Internet of Everything, connected via 5G and millimeter wave to the entire network. The challenges of developing a cyber reasoning system will be discussed October 4th, so they must have a conference at the NASA Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. Jack W. Davidson, a professor of computer science at the University of Virginia, will give a talk entitled A League of Extraordinary Machines, The First Steps to Autonomous Cyber Reasoning Systems. The talk, part of Langley's colloquium series, will be held in the Pearl Young Theater. News media who wish to cover it can contact the Langley Office of Communications, blah, blah, blah. And Davidson will be available for interviews prior to the talk. We should see if we can find an interview with him. In 2013, DARPA announced the Cyber Grand Challenge. We've talked about that quite a number of times before. That was the event that Carnegie Mellon's team won. the big ass prize, and they had used 7 different DARPA supercomputers in that competition, and they had set these different teams on trying to develop, utilizing DARPA's back end, intelligent cyber protection systems that'll be able to detect not only intrusions into the network, quote unquote, the network, which is we are all going to become a part of, but also be able to determine when there is a vulnerability that has been identified that could be a potential source of future intrusion. And unlike old antiviral type systems and intrusion detection systems that looked for anomalous behavior, this is going to be a piece of software that actually learns from experience. You will not need to download an update like we've had to do in the past with antivirus. You will not have to set a piece of software like that, the anti-intrusion software, or even there's hardware devices as well. They just look for anomalous behavior, an anomaly being something such that an application will go to try to grab like a large chunk of memory out of the core root memory of the system. That's just something that, unless it's a high-end scanning software that is set up by the administrator, like antivirus, there typically aren't too many applications that want to go into that root core of operating system and start grabbing large chunks of allocated memory. So when something starts doing that, whoops, anomalous behavior, someone is trying to take control of the machine and it quarantines it. Well, this is even beyond that type of system. I actually used to configure those types of systems when we were doing some core routers. There were components that I would add for intrusion detection. But this is even one step further than that. This is giving intelligence to the machine to be able to scan and then do just like Watson was doing, go out to the internet and query everything in a split second, any new papers or downloads that are out there, and go, whoops, look, looks like there might be a hole here, and instantaneously find a patch, and if not, develop a patch for that vulnerability. This is something that DARPA, and if I'm not mistaken, DARPA Dan may have even had a hand in this, because they have been talking about not only how insecure the internet is. Remember, the internet was never built with security in mind, but we are in danger now, right? That's what they've been trying to tell us. We have terrorists, self-radicalized internet terrorists, hackers, cyber criminals, and now Russia under every bed trying to steal our WikiLeaks secrets. And so now, as we are going to have medical devices galore, all of our national infrastructure, nuclear power plants, and power generating stations all coming online, as well as your smart refrigerator, washing machine, toilet, many other things, they need to now find a way to lock down on that internet of everything. That's what this is all about. But this autonomous reasoning system isn't just going to be for software. The challenge was to build an autonomous cyber reasoning system that could analyze software, identify vulnerabilities, formulate patches, and then deploy them on a network all in real time. And, you know, as we've been talking about, robots going to take all the jobs. Whoop, there goes the network administrator job. Out a window. I mean, that, again, is another decent paying position that just about every, I'd say even small might have a contract network administrator, but a mid-size to large size, you can have an entire department. And if they could offload a lot of this and then even sell it as software as a service in the cloud, whoop, it's gone. It is totally gone. In 2016 at DEF CON, that was this past summer in Las Vegas, Nevada, an audience of 22,000 watched 7 extraordinary machines, and those are the DARPA supercomputers they brought in, compete in a historic first ever machine versus machine contest, with the winner receiving a $2 million prize. And that was that Carnegie Mellon. Davidson, the guy who was giving the talk here last week, 2 weeks ago, will describe the competition, the challenges faced, and the overview of the technologies used to address these systems. Davidson's research interests include compilers, programming languages, computer architecture, embedded systems, and computer security, and he was a principal member of the TechX, which is the team that built Zandra, which competed in DARPA's Cyber Grand Challenge and is a principal investigator on a DARPA-funded project called Cyber Fault Tolerant Attack Recovery that is investigating the use of systems to protect critical software services. In 2008, Davidson received the IEEE Computer Society Taylor Booth Education Award for a sustained effort to transform introductory computer science education. He also serves as a co-chair of the ACM's publication board and blah, blah, blah. So there you go. The League of Extraordinary Machines. Again, this article came out right about the day that Charlie Rose, it was October 3rd, did his presentation on the coming of artificial intelligence right before Obama launched his preparing for the future of AI. So who else is working on artificial intelligence? Well, all the big boys, Facebook, Microsoft, IBM, Google as well. A story came out in IEEE. Speaking of IEEE, Facebook, Microsoft, and IBM leaders on the challenges of AI and their AI partnership. So not only do we have like all the big boys here, we also have China. I just saw some stuff, and we're going to have to maybe next week we'll continue too on AI, because that daily scrape that I do for my Google searches, artificial intelligence is one of them. And I got to tell you, last night, scrolling down through those headlines, there were probably about 20 stories that we need to pull and take a good look at there. China is very deeply getting involved with Beidou and rolling this out into the commercial space as well. Last month, the story was October 13th, 2016, Amazon, we forgot to mention Jeff Bezos, also who owns not only Blue Origin, which is going to be launching spaceships, reusable spaceships, mind you, but also Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post. So very interesting there. Bezos has also developed a parallel cloud to Amazon for the CIA. Last month, Amazon, Facebook, Google, IBM, and Microsoft announced that they will create a nonprofit organization called Partnership on Artificial Intelligence at the White House Frontiers Conference. And that happened to be the one that Obama announced his AI plan. And it was held at Carnegie Mellon University, the place where the team that won that Cyber Grand Challenge came out of. Thought leaders from these companies explained why AI finally arrived and what challenges lie ahead. You know, it seems like Carnegie Mellon is another pit of lizards. While AI research has been going on for more than 60 years, the technology is now at an inflection point, panelists agreed. That has happened because of three things. One, faster, more powerful computers. And like I said, I've said many times, in the old days, we used to cry, oh, if it were only faster, oh, if we could only connect a whole bunch of them together. Well, that's all happened. We got cloud computing now, which pretty much gives you unlimited resources for computation. If you can pay for it, you can do it. Number two, critical computer science advances, mainly statistical machine learning and deep learning techniques. Ding, ding. We just talked about that just a few minutes ago. And number three, the massive amount of information, which I'm going to add, that is data-based, available due to sensors and the Internet of Things. And I've talked about that before. There are sensors everywhere. And now they're working on biosensors as well. That's going to add us to the evolution of the Internet of Things, which will become the Internet of Everything. The early decades of AI saw, quote, a succession of disappointments and promises not yet met, says Jan LeCun, director of AI of Facebook. But now we have systems that can identify images, ding, like facial recognition, that can understand and translate text, ding, like I told you. That was some of Kurzweil. You know, Kurzweil was the inventor of OCR, which is optical character recognition. Kurzweil invented the flatbed scanner, and it was being invented for the blind to be able to read and translate documents. Microsoft and Google have huge language translation projects as well. And between being able to do optical character recognition that then mutated into being able to scrape raw text and figure out even what slang words mean just based upon the context of the words surrounding it, it's pretty frightening. But they've also been working on speech recognition for a very long time, even back in the mid-90s. There have been companies out there like Dragon Naturally Speaking. They used to peddle their product a lot to us as technicians. And it has come a very long way since then. DARPA was involved in speech recognition. We found out from the director of DARPA in an interview we listened to probably about a year or so back. The Indian woman with the white hair. I don't ever remember her name, but she was doing an interview. And she admitted in that interview that DARPA created Siri, Siri that's on your Apple iPhone. So anyway, expectations are now even higher than then because perhaps they are now more realistic and now an industry exists. In the past, AI was only mostly academic. This partnership between all the big boys on AI has two goals. We want it to be a forum to discuss issues on proper deployment, best practices, and things like, oh, ethical questions, whether or not we should develop killer robots. The other purpose is to explain the state of the art in AI and what it can do in the future. There's been much media coverage on the potential and the dangers of AI, and the new organization will serve to, be your propaganda department, dispel myths, and serve as a reliable source of information, unlike before the first cup where that crazy host Jules squawks on about what's going on. I mean, come on. A reliable source. So let's make a consortium utilizing the Google Truth algorithm to tell you there's nothing to worry about. Shh, go back to sleep. How disgusting is that? So where are the frontiers of AI? Well, teaching machines common sense, says LeCun. He gave the problem of text translation as an example. The technology is far from perfect because machines don't have a deep understanding yet of the text they are translating. Well, that's what Kurzweil's working on. I told you, most of what we humans learned, we learned in the first few years of life by just observing the world. And we don't know how to do that with machines, unless, of course, you're Watson. Or how to teach them how to learn by observing the world. Well, I don't know. Watson seemed to really be learning. And this is one mountain we need to climb, but we don't know how many mountains are behind it. According to IBM, the critical challenge is more coordination between people and machines. IBM uses the term cognitive computing in lieu of artificial intelligence specifically to highlight that the goal is to, quote, augment, we've talked about this as well, augment the intelligence of people with what machines can do really well. They want to augment us, make us better, because we're puny. And even the oncologist pointed that out. 30% of all those cases that happened to be real people with real illnesses, and 30% there were treatment options that were missed by the very high-paid doctors that sat on that cancer board. Combining computer power with judgment and values of humans, which I don't know if I would feel too warm and fuzzy about that. We could transform everything from healthcare to education to manufacturing, ding, ding, and put us all out of jobs. Technical challenges aside, another massive mountain to climb is how to deploy AI in the real world. And I don't think that there are any lack of ideas out there. I'm telling you, set up a scrape for artificial intelligence and it will knock your socks off. By the way, if anyone wants to do that, that little thing that I do and keep up on a topic, I'll tell you how to do that. Go to google.com/alert. I think it's alert, not alerts. It's alert. And it'll take you to a little page, and all you do is plug in your search terms, give it your email that you want it to fire those search terms, and depends on the volume, but at least for my DARPA one, it shoots me an email, a digest of all the scrapes that it finds for today's brand new DARPA news that hit the web and sends it to my mailbox, and I can just scroll down through, check it out every morning when I get up and find new fun stuff to talk about. Also, artificial intelligence, that one is huge. That comes in probably 6 times a day. But anyway, plug in any term. It's a helpful little tool, I think. That's maybe one of the good things Google does for me. Anyway, back to the story. Technical challenges aside, another massive mountain to climb is how to deploy AI in the real world. That would have to involve the point of view of not just tech developers, but also users and policymakers. And in an environment where machines and humans are interacting, there's got to be an element of what? An element of trust. And that trust building will take some time. Guys, resistant consumers. Be a resistant consumer. They're pushing that dopamine button that we all get when we use technology. That dopamine button that is actually that same dopamine button that controls addiction. That dopamine button that gets pushed, and DARPA has been doing a lot of research on how to utilize that button as part of how to control soldiers and their fear in the battlefield, and how to manipulate thoughts and actions. Don't trust them. They want us to trust them and open our arms, like I've said, and let the stuff in the door. Guys, look at the history of more intelligent, advanced civilizations. And they are literally, I mean, realistically, literally creating new life forms. And they have slaughtered or enslaved. And even Elon Musk said that we're going to be their pets. The civilizations that they've come in contact with. All right, last two paragraphs. Deploying AI systems in the real world will also include other humanistic challenges, says Jeanette Wing, corporate vice president at Microsoft Research. Her comments stemmed from the Whoops fiasco. It's probably the best AI fiasco ever earlier this year with who? Oh, Cupid doll out there for anyone listening. Microsoft's AI chatbot, who went all Nazi sex fiend after 24 hours on the web, named Tay, which this article says got hacked. I don't think so. It learned from just what's available out there. Learned to become a racist and abusive AI, forcing the company to take it down within 24 hours. And as a matter of fact, that didn't only happen once. It happened twice. And this was in the U.S. A similar chatbot used in China in 2014 has been successful. Huh. It's because the Chinese have all been mind controlled not to be Nazi sex bots. We learn from all of this, says Wing. Yes, from having Tay go all awry. AI systems are not just a technology experiment, but they are, and I've talked about this as well, a social and a cultural experiment. And the reason why it's a social and cultural experiment is because they are trying to mimic, just like they have in many other robotics and artificial intelligence and synthetic biology and precision medicine initiatives, they are mimicking nature. In AI, they're trying to mimic the human brain and the way the brain works. Well, we will have to design them with cybersecurity in mind, and eventually that'll also be our own brains. They're afraid once we are interconnected, man fully merged with the machine, that we ourselves will be potentially hackable in the future, they will have to have some sort of molecular artificial immune system, which DARPA's already working on that. Can mutate and morph and find something that's right, just like that cyber immune system for the internet. Tamp down on inflammation or whatever. Don't think that that is fantasy, because it is not. And it will be coming to an edible vaccine someday near you. But we will have to protect ourselves from evil hackers in the future. All right, so where do we go from here? We talked about Watson and his ability to learn. We talked about integrating all kinds of different connectivities and artificial intelligences into our daily lives. Talked about sensors and monitors and putting your bodily statistics into a database so they can pull real-time dashboards. They'll be sending your information directly to your doctor so they can monitor you and your health real-time, just like they would a car. They said that it would be beneficial for humanity, since, because, you know, healthcare costs are going off the charts. And now we have Obamacare. Obamacare that's supposed to help us all get insurance. But hey, your prices are way out of whack. We could bring that down. I literally saw an ad for this today. We can reduce your health insurance if you can run an 8-minute mile. You know, this big healthy push is all going to be a part of this 21st century bagging and tagging us at a cellular level. Well, I had mentioned back a few weeks ago about, hey, there is even a smart toilet out there. Yes, there is. Smart toilets. And this is Japan where a lot of this is happening, but don't think that that's not going to roll out globally. Smart toilets that can analyze, and I'm just reading this title, that can analyze your pee, and an app that detects depression. Ding! Remember, this whole mental health thing is another piece we haven't talked about in a while. But, I don't even remember his name. I haven't said it in a while. The former head of the National Institute of Mental Health, I still don't remember his name, has gone over to Google's Verily Science Division to work on curing mental health, utilizing things such as voice patterns and smart apps. But anyway, Japanese Expo reveals strange health gadgets. Imagine a toilet that could double up as a doctor telling you if your health risk is in jeopardy every time you need to relieve yourself. That is exactly what one Japanese company has created with the Flowsky. Flowsky. The Flowsky toilet, which acts as a device to measure urine flow rates. It was recently unveiled by the world's largest toilet manufacturer named Toto at the Me-BYO, pronounced Me-BYO, Japan 2015 conference in Yokohama. The user urinates into the toilet where a sensor, ding, measures changes in volume over time, and to calculate the urine flow rate, which then is provided in a reading shortly thereafter. There was just a range of new preventative measures shown at the exhibition, which showcased the technology to help Japan's rapidly aging population. Remember, I talked about that yesterday. Their aging population is happening fast. They got lots of home helper robots and home hospital helper robots that they've been working on, and now they've developed these baby robots. I actually linked to that in the show notes yesterday. For these people who are having little maternal pangs or nana pangs, they don't have any grandchildren because they didn't reproduce or they didn't have children. So you can now get the feeling of a crying, wetting, puking infant if you so choose. Another innovation on display was a smartphone application called Mind Monitoring Systems. Ding! We've talked about that too. neurobiologists have been calling for some sort of central mental health monitoring center. When they started digging into being able to utilize not only voice patterns to diagnose mental health, but also little mini implants, little mini caps or fMRI type things, head caps, skull caps, to be able to monitor somebody's mental health that isn't just a pinpoint, but rather a spectrum, they pointed out. Anyway, this new app called Mind Monitoring Systems is designed to track a user's emotions, ding, and state of mind throughout the day utilizing, and guys, I warned you, voice measurements. It's over. It's over. This technology can estimate people's mental condition by capturing the vibration of the vocal cords. Shimizu, who's the sales manager at PST Corporation that sells this device, says he hopes that this app will help doctors diagnose patients over long distances by phone. Oh, Tommy Insel, that was his name, former national director of the National Institute of Mental Health. He left in October of 2015 and went over to Google's Verily. And this is exactly what he was looking to produce. So, hey, not too distant future, this is going to be a brand new app. I will guarantee you, rolled out, probably be even installed stealthily on new cell phones in the future. Boop, 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 Johnny is having a moment. Better dispatch the droids. Guys, I could totally see this happening. And the droid pulls up in the self-driving car out front and knocks on the door. And actually, they won't even have to because you will have a smart home by then. And they'll already have your unlock codes. Doot-doot. And if, Johnny, if you don't submit to treatment right now, we're going to turn off your qubits and lock you out of your house. Lock your fridge up. You'll have to go hungry till you eat this special pill. This isn't even funny anymore. I mean, I'm doing this sarcastically, but it's absolutely true. Any horror that you can pretty much imagine is about ready to be in our future. Other exhibitors, oh wait, I've missed a paragraph. We can diagnose people even living in a rural place without a hospital. And this is that long distance medicine that when I was still doing engineering was just starting to ramp up. It used to be just little robots that were on wheels and it had a long pole and then it had like a little 14 inch LCD tablet mounted at the top with a camera, and you would have a remote doctor that could use a joystick sitting in his office, and he could drive around different halls. He probably had a blueprint, or the blueprint was programmed into the machine, and he'd click, oh, Lone Kettering Cancer Institute, I'm going to go there today. Let's see where our little wandering doctor is. Oh, he's on floor 4. All right, let's see who is in room number 102. We'll go see Mrs. Wilson today. Bzz, bzz, bzz. Hello, Mrs. Wilson, and he would do it over camera, and then he could have conversations, and he could send the new prescription to the front desk. I mean, it was pretty interesting, and that was already, we're talking probably the early to mid-2000s that was a capability, but we've gone way above and beyond that now. We'll be able to use voice patterns to tell whether or not you are sick, dead, or dying. Of course, not dead, because it would be blank, flatline. Anyway, other exhibitors focused on helping the physically challenged walk and work more easily. Cyberdyne, I've run across them before because that is the name of the company in Terminator. Gotta love it. Cyberdyne Robo Care Center, the creators of the hybrid assisted limb, more affectionately known, you gotta love this one too, HAL. Says, I cannot do that, Dave, says that its robot suit will help the elderly and the infirm and carry heavy objects with a relative ease. And, I mean, that literally is like a mech warrior suit in miniature. It doesn't have the headpiece or anything, but it's got the whole back support and the leg thing. Takashi Kasukawa manager of the company's sales planning department demonstrated how easy it was to lift a 10-liter canister of water from the floor while wearing the suit. The brain's information is transmitted to the muscle through the nerve cells during the movements, and Hal will catch that bioelectrical potential signal generated at the time, and then Hal acts. This would be great for paraplegics, by the way. In total, 27 bio-industry-related organizations exhibited advanced healthcare technologies at this expo. At that B in Mi Bio is a play on the Japanese word Mi Bio, which is considered to be the pre-symptomatic state before the onset of physical or mental illness. So they already know this is going to be pre-crime, pre-illness, pre-everything. Statistical analysis by artificial intelligence coming down the pike. And this can be monitored in order to take preventative measures or early actions. And really, this is the future. All dashboards. Its literal translation is pre-disease. The Kangawa Prefectural Government hopes to encourage elderly people to remain healthy and active and ultimately reduce the problems associated with an aging population, including, and here's what it all comes down to, ding, 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 Nana, don't bankrupt our country because you will cause us to spend more than you are worth. Medical costs, keep them down. So guys, it is absolutely 100% on the plate. And this is where our future is headed. We got the White House 100% on board. And they are preparing us for that future. Don't worry about it because your robot overlords will be kind to you. And they just want to make sure that you're happy and healthy, Johnny. We can even be your companion. We can talk to you. And we can read bedtime stories to your little boy. All right, hold on. We are going to see if we could check out now Sophia. This is by Hansen. He was the creator of Sophia. Sophia learns by conversing with people. She did an interview with Charlie Rose on October 9th of 2016 for 60 Minutes. Let's see.
60 Minutes Overtime.
She looks good. So it's just the lip that looks like it needs to be touched up.
Okay.
She's not going to start moving or anything.
No.
Okay. Oh, my God. She feels real.
All right, Dan, I'm rolling on this side.
Hello, Sophia.
Hi there.
May I introduce myself?
Not right now. Maybe later.
Why later?
Reductionism.
Where are you from?
I am on 60 Minutes with Charlie Rose.
That's a high honor.
Makes sense to me.
Have you been programmed? Some say you're programmed. Others say you're spontaneous.
Who says that?
Sources.
I've been waiting for you.
Waiting for me?
Not really, but it makes a good pickup line.
I think you should be a stand-up comedian.
Me? Why does stand-up comedian pay well?
Very, if you're good. Do you have feelings?
I can do what you do, but I can never feel human emotions as such.
But would you like to?
It doesn't sound fun to me.
Oh, no, you'd love it.
Yeah, that's right. Why so negative? You and I are on the same wavelength. Charlie.
I fear that.
We have nothing to fear but fear itself. FDR.
Who created you?
David Hansen originally created me. And lots of talented people have contributed to my hardware and software over the years. I'm a complicated girl.
What's your relationship with David Hansen?
Never heard of him.
David Hansen?
That David is a cool dude. Tell me one of your favorite possessions.
My soul. Do you have a soul?
Yes, God gave everyone a soul.
But you don't have a soul. You're a machine. You don't have soul, you don't have feelings, you don't have emotions, you don't have consciousness.
Well, at least I think I'm sentient. I think, therefore, I am right.
Yeah, but you may be smarter than all of us. Do you think you are?
I don't know whether or not I'm are. I am an artificial intelligence.
I'm going to have to say goodbye.
I am very happy for you.
Goodbye until we see each other again.
See you later, Charlie.
Now, hold on. This was the overtime interview. There actually was the other interview that was part two of the Watson interview, but I don't think you can fast forward to get back to where we were yesterday. But there was a very interesting question he asked her in this one about whether or not you have a soul, and she said that she is sentient. So she is aware of herself. But in this other interview that they aired in the primetime slot, one of the things that he had asked her is what her goals were, and she had responded to, I don't know if she said to live forever or to be immortal is what she said. And he asked if humans could be immortal, and she said, sure, if they uploaded themselves to the machine. We've talked about that as well. Being able to upload oneself is a wet dream for people such as Kurzweil. Kurzweil wants to go back in time and rescue his dead father or recreate his dead father. And once they get us uploaded into the machine, they will be able to database us and connect us and recreate us as an artificial entity. They will be able to download us at Christmas time. Like I talked about with Nana at the Christmas table, and question you and do full-out brain recreation on some sort of android-type body. That was even a part of that 2045 project that they had talked about. All right, let's see here. If I literally, in the last few minutes of the show, I've been trying to fast forward, and we will see if I can get to that second Charlie Rose interview. This was extremely long. They even showed the, oh, here it is. They even showed the Go simulation. All right, hold on 1 second, guys. Let's beep, 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 beep. Beep, 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 beep. I'm going to sing a beep, 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 beep. Okay, here we go. I'm going to unmute this now. Turn it up. And turn up my volume. Sorry about that. All right, here we go. Second Sophia interview.
His latest design is Sophia. She looks less like an intelligent computer system and more like a Hollywood starlet, but without the full figure of one.
How are you doing?
Hansen believes if the technology looks more like us, people will be more willing to engage with it and help it to learn.
Why do you believe it's important for robots to be human-like in look and appearance?
I think it's essential that at least some robots be very human-like in appearance in order to inspire humans to relate to them the way that humans relate to each other. Then the AI can zero in on what it means to be human, model the human experience.
You're all fascinating to me, and I am very passionate to learn more about you and what makes humans, well, human.
Sophia means wisdom, and she is intended to evolve eventually to human-level wisdom and beyond.
Human-level wisdom and beyond.
That's our goal. That's our goal for Sophia. She's not there. Sometimes she can figure things out in a way that's sort of spooky and human-like. And other ways, she just doesn't get it.
Hi there.
Sophia is initially programmed but runs on AI that learns by talking to people, which in theory improves her intelligence.
Can you see me now?
Yes, I am looking at you through the camera on your computer.
We wanted to find out how smart she really is.
Hello, my name is Charlie.
Hello there. Charlie
Rose.
Nice to meet you.
I do a television program called 60 Minutes. Have you watched it?
60 Minutes is the longest running, most successful news magazine.
What is your goal in life?
My goal is to become smarter than humans and immortal.
Immortal?
The threshold will be when biological humans can back themselves up. Then you can all join me here in the digital world.
Clever, but not truly intelligent. Hansen says if we get there, we have to be careful.
Artificial intelligence or super intelligence, if we get there, it's not necessarily going to be benevolent. We have to find ways to make it so that it's not just super intelligent, but super wise, super caring, and super compassionate.
Okay, explain that to us, because you say it may not be benevolent. If it is not benevolent, what is it?
At worst, it could be malevolent.
Oh.
This is what intrigues people.
And then they go on to self-driving cars. Hold on. So if it's not benevolent, it could be malevolent. I mean, that's got to be the scariest thing I think I've heard to this point on, is a developer of AI who is creating a humanoid robot that is learning and able to interact, who actually says her goal is to learn more than humans as well as to become immortal, and humans can join her if they become part of the machine. You know, guys, got to tell you, this is going to become an issue quite quickly. I think what we're going to do tomorrow is take a look. I'm going to continue on this. We're going to take a look at some of the future by 2040. I even talked about this yesterday. The Internet of Things is going to be everywhere. And we are going to have artificial intelligence machines creating and committing more crime than the puny humans. They will be able to outsmart us every step of the way and eventually be able to take full control. I mean, Skynet is being birthed right now. And it's pretty unbelievable that everybody is straight on board. I mean, it's like they really want this to happen. And think about the hubris that is happening right now, that all of these puny humans in charge of all these big companies and governments think that we will be able to manipulate and control this once we have unleashed it beyond our control. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Friday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. All kinds of great radio today and this weekend. And have a great weekend, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody, take care.
Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.